Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com.
Hey everybody, thank you for joining me. I'm Coach Al for this new edition of our Pursuit Athletic Performance podcast. It's been a little while since we visited with everyone. It's been a busy time here at Pursuit Athletic Performance, and among the things that have been going on is I've been out on the road a little bit. I was honored and pleased to participate at the Medicine and Science conference out in the week prior to the Western States 100 Endurance Run, and I'm really excited today because sort of in connection with that trip, I've got a really special guest and her pacer with me on the podcast today. I want to introduce Larissa Danis to everyone. Larissa was the second overall woman at the Western States 100 on this early Tuesday morning. Larissa, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. How are you today?
Al, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I am doing very well, thank you, and I'm recovering far faster than I ever could have hoped.
Right, that's fantastic. Now, I want to make sure we include Deb Livingston, who paced you for around 30 miles or so at the Western States 100. Deb's a Pursuit Athletic Performance Horse Engineering Schnitzit Strider, and who have I forgotten, Deb? Anyone else? Deb, thanks for joining us on the call this morning as well.
Thank you. It's always fun to talk with you, Al.
Yeah. Deb herself is, you're getting ready for your own 100-miler coming up here in 10 to 12 days, and I was thinking to myself this morning, I wonder if Larissa has agreed to go out and pace you for 30 miles or so at the end of that one.
I'm sure she'd jump on the opportunity. but yeah, she's getting ready to make her big move. So, family trip, and Scott's cousin Danny will be helping us. So I'm sure she'll give back the favor at some point in the future.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's as I've said, it's a real treat to have both you guys on the podcast. You know, Deb, you've been involved in ultra running and have been competing at the ultra distance out on the trails for many years. And Larissa, I think you're relatively new to the sport, all things being equal. So, you know, we've got sort of an interesting juxtaposition in terms of experience of athletes. Having both of you on the podcast, and I know you have a close friendship, and it goes back a while, perhaps to some races in Vermont too. I know Larissa, you're from New Hampshire, or at least live there now. Tell us a little bit about who you are. Who is Larissa Danis? I mean, I think everyone out there in the ultra running world is getting to know a little bit about you, but tell us a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. In a nutshell, I'm a girl who's very deeply passionate about running, which is a sport that I only discovered, a few years ago. I ran my first ultra marathon back in 2010. And I guess, how did I get into it? It all started out, with a girl who was really out of shape and needed something to move her butt. I started my first office job back in 2007 and became really sedentary, and my fitness kind of waned. I was never particularly active, but I got especially inactive at that point, and I needed something to motivate myself and get myself active and going again. And as a child, I always used to come back to New Hampshire, you know, during the summertime, and I'd hike with my dad in the White Mountains. So I had a lot of, you know, very deep-seated close memories of that area, and I decided to get into hiking. And, you know, as soon as I got back in the mountains, I really, you know, kind of rekindled that love for the outdoors and for nature, and I started to climb more mountains and get very into peak bagging, which, you know, kind of naturally transitioned into putting together really long hiking routes in the mountains, which then progressed into kind of realizing, oh, you know, I can, you know, if I run downhill a little bit, I can be a bit more efficient out there on the trail. And, you know, I had a friend who I hiked with quite a bit, and he told me about the Vermont 100, you know, one time when we were out on a really long hike. And he was like, you know, this is a great event. You know, a lot of the times runners towards the end of these events, they're looking for what's called a pacer, which essentially is a companion that, you know, helps them get through the final miles of the race. And it was funny. I remember telling him, I was like, you know, I can't run 30 miles. That's impossible. He's like, no, it's slow. It's, you know, there's a lot of walking involved, and you should give it a shot. And needless to say, I was intrigued. I went out to the Vermont 100 in 2009, and I paced a runner who I'm still very close with for the last 30 miles of her 100K, and it was very much an eye-opening experience. I have a lot of, you know, very vivid memories of that night, you know, just running along those roads, you know, with just by the light of the moon with those glow sticks, you know, showing you the way, and it was like I kind of figured out, you know, where I want to go with my, you know, with my athletic, you know, pursuits. And I told myself after that I was going to come back and run the 100K the following year, which I did. And from there, it's just kind of progressed to where it is today. And, you know, throughout the course of the last few years, I've, you know, just learned a lot, you know, just through, you know, trial and error and, you know, finding ways of training healthily and sustainably that have enabled me to achieve the level of running that I've gotten to, you know, right now, which has been pretty neat.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. And, you know, as I was listening to you, I hadn't heard that before. As I was listening to you talk, and I bet Deb could probably convey a similar experience, but it's kind of funny, as I was listening and I was thinking, you know, you had that one experience that was sort of, in a way, like an aha moment, and that's become the driver for you, you know, that one experience. And I think the athletes that I know that I've worked with or gotten to know over the years, many of them have had similar kinds of experiences that gave them a clear vision of where they wanted to go. And the athletes that tend to flounder or not achieve some level of success oftentimes don't have that experience for whatever reason. You know, they're not sure what they're seeking or what really resonates inside of them, you know. And so that, I'm sure you look back and you really conveyed it. You know, it's that was a really powerful and important experience for you in your life, not only as a runner but as a person, you know. Helped you really identify with something, yes?
Absolutely. I mean, I've always been, you know, a person that's, you know, had that vision, and I always love to work towards goals. You know, sometimes they seem a little bit out of reach, but I think it is very important, especially, you know, as you start to pursue, you know, higher levels of your sport, you know, to have something that you're working towards. Otherwise, you know, really, why do it if you're not motivated and excited by it?
Yeah, no question. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is I can certainly say in my experience as a coach that, you know, in this day and age especially, where there's so many directions an endurance athlete can go in, somebody that gets involved in running or in the sport of triathlon, you know, there's everything from adventure racing, you know, the tough mudder Spartan thing, all the way to the other extreme, which might be, you know, which might be Ironman. And then there's ultra running, and of course there's road racing, and when we try to do all of those things because we're not really sure in which direction we want to go, we end up floundering to some degree. And I think there's a lot of athletes out there. So, I mean, you've already really shared a nugget, I think, for a lot of our listeners, which is to be open to those experiences because you never know when they're going to come. And And then trust your intuition, right? I mean, listen to those voices that say, you know, follow this path and keep at it. Of course, I get a sense that for you it was just, you know, it was a very natural progression. I mean, it's just something you became very passionate about. You know, I had a chance to meet your mom when we were out there at Western States, and I really enjoyed meeting her, you know. And that was awesome. And, you know, your parents have been active physically, right? I mean, they've been involved in a whole bunch of things. Your mom was telling me about your dad, and she was talking to me about, I think I'm going to get an email at some point about RAM, Race Across America. I may get, you know, recruited onto a team. That was something your mom and I were talking about a little bit, that your dad seems to want to be able to do. Tell me a little bit about your parents and growing up and how, you know, that lifestyle that, you know, sort of you evolved into was something that perhaps was part of your, you know, your upbringing.
So it was actually the opposite, especially when it comes to a lot of my father's endurance cycling. My dad was, when I was younger, he worked as a lawyer and then an investment banker. So he was, for the most part, traveling while I was growing up, and I didn't see him all too much. And it wasn't until he retired, and even then, until I started pursuing endurance sports, that he kind of discovered a passion for it as well. He's always loved cycling, but he didn't take up the the whole ultra cycling until I started ultra running. And it was funny because I think he kind of decided to pursue it because he saw that, you know, I seemed to have a proclivity towards endurance, and he's like, "Oh, maybe I can do this stuff too." And I mean, he's really got a skill for it, especially given, you know, his age bracket. And
right.
I mean, he's like me. He's a very, you know, driven and deeply passionate person. So he gives it his all, you know, when he finds something that he loves. And it's been nice because we've kind of been able to motivate one another. You know, like he'll hear about my results and get excited, and, you know, the same thing goes for me. And actually, a little funny thing that came out of this whole Western States thing was I think he said that if I placed like top five, he would commit to doing Raw, which is the half Ram, you know, it's Race Across the West next year. So when I placed in the top three, he was really excited and inspired, and now he's committed to doing that next year. So I'm happy that I could motivate him there.
You know, that's awesome. You know, that, you know, I have to say it was a little surprise. You know, it's interesting to hear that. So, you know, it's, and Deb could speak to this as well too, I'm sure. It's really fascinating, and I've always found personally very, very motivating when you sit back and realize how many people you inspire when you're working hard daily and passionate, you know, about things the way you are about ultra running, and you know you're inspiring everyone in your circle, and it's really cool when you have the same kind of impact on your parents. I mean, wow, you know, you've actually got your dad inspired and motivated. That is just super cool, you know, and it just shows that it works, you know, in all directions and in all ways. You know, we're all connected, and being an advocate for something of this caliber on this level is just really cool. And you know, if your dad gets a chance to listen to this podcast, I'm sure he'll chuckle as he listens to you talk about that. You know, very awesome. That's really cool. So you know, it's funny thinking about or sort of transitioning to Western States. I certainly want to give you an opportunity to talk about, you know, your training and some of your philosophy and your preparation. But I also want to bring Deb in. So let's transition to Western States. I remember when Deb had originally, you know, mentioned to me that, you know, that there was a runner that was going to be out at Western States competing, and she sort of knew. I think, Deb, you knew I was going to be out there at the conference. Mm-hmm. Quite a long time. I'd planned that trip for a while ago. And Larissa, at the time, I didn't even know your name. I didn't even know who you were. It shows my ignorance as far as following the, you know, what was happening at the elite level in ultra running. But my first concern for Debbie was her Tahoe Rim 100 race and the fact that her pacing you is going to be about 3 weeks out from Tahoe, which in my experience is a little close in an ideal taper to be, you know, to that sort of goal or a race. But Debbie really expressed her real desire to be there for you. And as I started to learn a little bit more about you and about Western States and your prep and you being at Western States, I got really excited about the opportunity that Deb had to come out. And when she told me she was coming, I was just super psyched. I thought it was going to be great to be out there with her. So, Deb, talk for a moment, if you would, about when Larissa asked you to pace, or how did that ball happen? And just share some of your thoughts about going out there. I know you haven't done Western States before, and you yourself are an elite ultra runner, so obviously Western States is one of the big ones. I mean, it's truly at the top of the heap as far as 100-mile races are concerned. It's the oldest and arguably among the most prestigious, certainly. So talk a little bit about how that all went down and how, you know, you came to be out there pacing Larissa.
Yeah, what's quite interesting with pacing is that, I mean, 16 years I've been in the ultra running scene, but I've been asked by various other runners to help them pace in other races, but it's never worked out. Either if I've had a race that I've already was going to be running in, or I was race directing somewhere else, or, you know, something. But I've always had a bit of a desire to give back. I mean, I'm a race director, but I've never really been involved in the volunteer side of an ultra event. And what actually happened is Larissa was at Peak races, and I was there as well, but running 50, and she ran the 30, which she won outright, which I think is quite amazing. But she was chatting with Scott, who was waiting for me to finish off the 50, and was still talking about Western States and that she still needed a pacer, and he volunteered me.
Right. Okay.
Much. You know, he said, "Well, let me see if I can convince that," because Scott, you know, he's so passionate about these races. You know, he just thinks they're so great, and you know, he knows that. I've always had a lot of respect for Western States, even though I've never felt the desire to really run it myself because it's not my type of terrain. But there's so much energy and just history to it that, you know, and now after the fact of being there, I do have a desire for it. But anyways, we talked about it on the way home, and he said, "We don't have anything going on that weekend. We'll get you out there. It'd be a great experience for you." And I didn't have to think about it long before I was like, all right, you know, yes, it will be a great experience, and I would love to help out a friend. So we just, you know, went from there. I contacted Larissa again, said, "Do you still need a pacer? I'm happy to help." Now, I also felt like, I could help her out. Like, I could be there, and I would be able to keep the pace that she needed to keep. And I knew what, being, you know, so much into ultra running myself, I knew what an ultra runner needs from their pacer. And I knew what to sit down with her and how to sit down with her and talk with her through that. And because I've been that person running so many times that I felt like I could be a help. And so I was, you know, happy for that opportunity. And it was a great experience. And it's, you know, family is awesome. And Larissa was great to pace with. She's very easygoing, laid back, and, you know, very just focused. So it was. I didn't have to do a lot of what some pacers have to do out there, which is coax their runner to keep on going, to not give up, to, you know, help them through puke fests. And she didn't have any of that.
Right. So. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny to hear you describe it, Deb, because I think, you know, having been there, it just sounds like that's just exactly the way it went down. I mean, Larissa, you had from my perspective, about as perfect a race as a runner could have, especially for your first time out there at Western States. And I remember I've had the opportunity a couple of times to crew at Badwater, which is a very different kind of race because it's completely self-supported. But certainly being a crew member and a pacer, if you will, at Badwater, from my perspective, was a very, very different experience. It involved a lot of coaxing, a lot of pushing, a lot of shoving, a lot of helping to will a runner to keep going. And Larissa, you seem to be so strong through the entire race, like almost nothing I've ever seen, and certainly the way that you finished. So, Larissa, from your perspective, talk a little bit about having Deb be your pacer out there and what you were thinking. Obviously, you have a great deal of respect for Deb. Everyone does, who certainly in the Northeast, that knows ultra running because of her longevity and certainly a standard of excellence that she herself has represented for so many years. And yeah, you gotta love Scott too. And a guy is so passionate about everything related to sport. I just love the guy. And so, but Larissa, talk about that Deb a little bit and having her out there.
Yeah, I mean, I can say without a doubt, my race would not have gone, you know, in the direction that it did. I wouldn't have finished, you know, as I did had Deb not been there. Not only to pace me, but just, you know, to help my crew out, you know, since my mom and my sister were very, you know, new to crewing an ultra runner. I mean, Deb truly made it possible for me to achieve a result that, you know, is beyond my wildest dreams, I guess. You know, so, I mean, even, I guess to step back, you know, like, so, I mean, I got into Western State somewhat last minute, which meant that my, you know, pool for, you know, pacers was, I guess, dwindling because, you know, by the time that I had gotten in, a lot of, you know, my friends who lived locally out, you know, in California had already committed to pacing other runners. So I found myself in a bit of a bind because when you're looking for someone to pace you, you really want to make sure, you know, you have someone that, you know, firstly is a friend and you know is going to be there and provide you with that encouragement and support when you're out there. But secondly, you know, has the experience and can also keep up with you if you're feeling strong towards the tail end of your race. I mean, I know there were instances I've heard of this year at Western States where runners were dropping their pacers up at the
right,
you know, the front of the field because yeah, you know, the pacers just couldn't keep up. So when I was looking for a pacer, I kind of posted a very generic kind of feeler message on Facebook, you know, like, hey, anyone interested in pacing at Western States? It was before peak, and you know, I had some people write back to me, but no one who, you know, I actually had really spent a lot of time with in person and who seemed to have the experience and whom I had the respect for, like Deb, you know. So, I mean, I was like, all right, you know, I mean, there's some really great people, but I just don't know them well enough to like, want to take them up on the offer. So I kind of thanked people and sat on it for a bit. And then, you know, when peak rolled around, you know, I ran the 50K and Deb was in the 50 mile and I had the opportunity to chat with Scott and Deb told the story there, so I won't repeat it. But I was just beyond thrilled that we could make it work out. And, I mean, I was, you know, it was funny. Those last 30, I guess it was last 30, the 30 miles I ran with Deb and with my sister, I was very focused and very quiet, much more so than I usually am. And I kept apologizing to Deb. I'm like, my company must just be so boring because I need to just think and stay in the moment. And that's really how I kind of approached my whole race, you know. And I think that, but I mean, just having Deb there, you know, to remind me, you know, when to fuel and to you know, provide an encouraging, you know, word when I would hit a mental low, because I did hit a few, you know, during those 30 miles, and just to be there, you know, when you have the company of someone, you know, who you really, really care about and really just, you know, are close friends with and have respect for, I mean, it provides that little extra boost that makes you want to, you know, keep running your strongest because you want to be there and make them proud too. So, I mean, Deb truly made my race and it was really wonderful to have her there.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, that's just awesome, you know. You know, I have to say, I mean, everything you're saying about, you know, about obviously, you know, just having her there and all of the intangibles that you probably can't even put into words, you know, but it certainly was, you know, a wonderful coming together of a lot of things, and it all resulted in, you know, again, in you just having an incredible race. You know, I could, Larissa, honestly, I could have you on in multiple podcasts to talk about all of the aspects related to your training and to your racing. And, you know, I had Deb recently on the podcast, and I think similarly for her, you know, there's so many aspects to the mental side of ultra running that so many other endurance athletes are curious about. And, you know, naturally as a coach, I say all of the time, you know, over and over again, that you have to be in the moment, you know, and that to worry about what's ahead or what's behind you takes you out of that space that you need to be in. And I think a lot of us hear these kinds of things over and over again. You know, I want to talk about Western States a little bit more, but since you mentioned it and this whole element of having Deb there and just, you know, having the security and the feeling of knowing, you know, her level of experience and the friendship that you guys share and the bond that you have, and talk a little bit about that mental aspect for you, because certainly in a 100-mile race, I mean, that's a long way to run, right? It's a long time to be out there. What are some of the things that you could share with our listeners that you feel are most important that you've learned in the process of training and racing, and even specifically about those 30 miles?
Yeah, no, it's a subject I love because, I mean, you know, I think especially when it comes to 100-mile races, the mental component is much more important than the physical component. I mean, I can tell you the first 100-mile race I did, which was Rocky Raccoon back in 2011, I was not physically prepared to do that race. I had next to no training, but I had a mental desire to finish. And I finished, and I mean, it's an easy rolling course, but I finished in a decent time given my training. So, I mean, the first thing I can say to people is, you know, really work on that mental aspect, because it's pretty amazing what the body can do when the mind has, you know, the willpower and the desire to make the body do something, I guess. Right. So for me, I mean, and a lot of this is easier said than done. I mean, as you hit the nail on the head, I mean, the most important thing is really staying in the moment. It can be really overwhelming, you know, to think about just how much distance and time you need to cover if you, you know, you try to think too far forward in your race. And for me, and what, you know, like, and especially at Western States, what I really noticed is, I mean, I was just very much in a zone where I was just, you know, I was there and I was just experiencing things as they came, and I wasn't too focused or, you know, letting myself get too overwhelmed by, you know, what was going to happen in the future. And that's really, I mean, what you have to tell yourself is that's all you can do. I mean, you can't prepare for the future. You know, like, things are going to happen and they're going to pop up, and, you know, all you can do is control what's happening right now. So, I mean, staying in the moment is definitely very important. And the other thing, and, I mean, you probably saw this a lot, Al, is just maintaining a positive outlook. Even if you don't necessarily feel positive, just trying to force those positive thoughts to come. And I'm lucky because I tend to be a positive person, and especially when I'm running. I mean, it's something that I just love so much. You know, I'm out there and I'm smiling and I'm having a ball, and, you know, just keeping that outlook, you know, throughout your race, you know, even just, you know, smiling if, you know, you get a little down. They say that, like, those things can really, really help you. So I always try to, you know, stay in the moment and stay really positive. And I find that just, you know, makes the miles tick by, and it reminds me of why I want to run, and it enables me to accomplish, you know, results that I don't necessarily think I have in me. So,
right.
I mean, like, yeah.
Awesome stuff. You know, I have to say, you know, I was thinking as you were talking, I was thinking back, and Deb, you know, jump in here too. Mm-hmm. I think the first time that we actually saw you on the course was Forest Hill School, which is, I think, around, I think that's the aid station at mile 62 of Western States. And, you know, we were all, it's the first opportunity that I got a chance to see Deb on race day as well. And because we actually missed each other prior to the start of the race, never connected with all of the activity and everything that was going on in Squaw Valley. But, you know, I was thinking to myself, how are you going to arrive at that mile 62 aid station? And, you know, your mom and your sister and Deb and, you know, we were all kind of prepping your area and making sure that you were going to have everything that you needed to continue on. And, of course, Deb was going to jump in at that point and run with you. And I will tell you, Larissa, I was blown away, and I'm going to absolutely include a couple of the pictures on the blog post that's going to accompany this podcast, but how you arrived at Forest Hill. You were smiling. I mean, you clearly had worked hard to get to that point. You were in second place at that point, about 20 to 25 minutes down from the leader of the race at that point in time. And I'll share this information in the copy that I include with the podcast, but all of our listeners need to know your name was not on the list of women to watch in this race. I mean, there were 10 other women or so that, for whatever reason, were more high profile, and there you were in second place at the Western States 100, and you arrive and you're smiling, you're having a good time. I mean, smiling a mile wide. It was genuine. It was real. And all of us were just, you know, completely connected to that on a very, very deep level. And, this feeling welled up inside of me that kind of reminded me of the feelings that I have had in the past for myself and why I do this sport, you know, why I went out there and why I love being in the woods. And thank you for that. You know, that was an incredible feeling. And watching you guys run off, you know, lockstep with the same mindset was so inspirational, you know, for everybody there and certainly for me as well. And I remember, I think of all of the things that I remember about the race, it was probably that moment and the fact that, remarkably, you were able to carry that through. You know, the finish line, what's really cool, Larissa, is, and Deb could speak to this as well, you know, for me as a coach, the things that are really powerful about our sport are the things that we can carry over into life and empower us in ways that go far beyond sport. And your positive outlook, which is genuine and real, and your ability to bring joy into an act as simple as running is just incredible. And I think that is where the power is in our sport and our participation in sport and how we can inspire others. But it's not as easy to do as it is to say, right? And I, certainly for me as a coach, I reiterate and remind people, you know, this is something you have to bring into your training every day, to pat yourself on the back, to be positive, to recognize the things that you're doing well and to feel good about it and to force yourself to smile when sometimes you don't necessarily feel like it, right?
Yeah, no, it's so true. And I guess I just feel so lucky to have discovered a sport that makes me so intensely happy. And I will mention that coming into Forest Hill, I think I was especially happy because I knew Deb was going to be running with me from there. So, like, I hit the asphalt because there's a little, you know, I think 2 mile stretch of asphalt, you know, between the previous aid station and then Forest Hill. And I was like, oh, I'm going to see Deb. And I was so excited to see you too, Al, because I wasn't expecting that either. And, you know, it's just those little things. You really have to embrace them when you're out there because, like, you know it, like, just those two little things, you know, like, they gave me a huge boost, you know, heading out from Forest Hill for the rest of that race. And, you know, you have to embrace them as they come. And it was really a pretty wonderful moment. And, you know, since the race, it's amazing. I mean, I've received so many wonderful notes from people that just said they really enjoyed, you know, watching me run while I was out there because I was, you know, very obviously happy and just, you know, having a ball. And it's just really, you know, wonderful to know that you can, you know, inspire others. I've never thought of myself as an inspiring person. I do this because I love it, and I'm glad that my love for the sport, you know, is making a difference for other people too.
Yeah, very cool. Deb, share just a few thoughts, if you would, about what you were thinking at that point at Forest Hill. You were excited. I gave you a little massage, making sure you were ready to go, right? But you guys took off. I mean, you probably ran 7-minute pace down the hill out of the aid station, I bet.
Well, you know, it's a slight downhill. You know, you're super excited. And people are lining the street. I mean, people are cheering from you. There's some people in a bar setting in a couple of spots. You know, people are at their cars. And you know, I remember, as Larissa, saying a lot of, thank you very much. Thank you. You know, it's kind of like you're on parade. You know, you're it's a really exciting and uplifting point in the race, you know, especially after, you know, that you're 100K. Now you've hit 100K. You know, she's proud. And I don't know how much Larissa can, speak to this, but how much she ran alone leading into that. I know she had a couple points where she was with people a lot, but then as things start to spread out and thin out, you know, there's periods of time when you're alone, you know, alone with your own thought. And, you know, it's sometimes it's great to have that, but it's also very, exciting to be with someone, and you know that person's going to be with you for a while, and you know, knowing that, you know, you're over halfway through the race now, you know, and this is where, you know, from here, and maybe about, you know, 10 or, you know, 20 more miles on, that's really when the race begins. You know, when in an ultra, I mean, the first 50 to 60 miles are just the shakeout, you know, just getting into a groove, chatting with people, meeting people, seeing the sights. So that, you know, that's also, you know, a kind of a turning point in an ultra race. I had my sneakers on probably 3 hours earlier than I needed to.
Right. Yeah.
I was so ready to go.
Yeah. we were all so excited. And, you know, Larissa, the fact that you were having such a breakthrough race, at least from our perspective at that point, it just made the whole thing almost like a dream, you know. It just couldn't have gone any better. It was interesting, you know, there was some talk by a few folks there at Forest Hill that the woman who was in the lead at the time was struggling a little bit, but it kept coming back to me that, you know, to be in second at that point with so many miles to go, and obviously anything can happen in these races, in either direction, good or bad, that again, it was more important to just be where you were, and the fact that you were in second at that point was just remarkable. And I think the next time that we saw you was at Rucky Chucky, before the water crossing. All I remember about that point in time was the truck ride down to the river. You guys heard about that? That was crazy. I mean, that was like, you know, I've been four-wheeling before, but it was nothing quite like the 2-mile trek down this gravel dirt road to get to the river. But the thing I remember most about Rucky Chucky was watching Deb nearly disappear as you guys were crossing. From that point on, the next time that we saw you was, of course, at Highway 49, a little over 93 miles into the race, and I think we all knew at that point in time that, you know, this certainly second was firmly in hand for you, Larissa, and again, it was just remarkable to see you roll in and then roll out with your sister, and then it was just a celebration. Talk a little bit about your, if you would, about your preparation for Western States. I mean, your training, you know, what are some of your philosophies? Certainly you arrived at Western States supremely fit and ready to handle that course. I almost feel like we could, you know, we could talk for an hour or more about all of these elements, because I'd love to know about how much you studied the course and how your training may have prepared you specifically for that course, which obviously is thought of as predominantly a downhill course, but it's got plenty of climbing in it as well too, not the least of which is the first a couple miles coming out of Squaw Valley. But talk a little bit about your preparation for Western States, if you would. I know all of our listeners are really curious to hear some of your thoughts.
Oh, sure thing. And I guess maybe this is a little embarrassing to admit, but I didn't really study the course or even know the aid stations, and Deb can attest to this, until like the day before the race while I was going through that.
So sometimes ignorance is bliss when it comes to apparently, you know. I tell everybody as a coach, you gotta know the course ahead of time, and you gotta train on a course that's you know, at least as you get closer to your race, try to prepare specifically, but maybe you're just so freaking good that it just doesn't matter.
No, well, I'm an odd one. And actually, when I think about it, the three best races I've ever had in my life, which I would say are Western States, the Boston Marathon earlier this year, and Vermont 100 last year, I intentionally went into those races with a goal not to plan and just to really run for the love of running, enjoy the experience, take care of myself, you know, pace sustainably, and just see where that would bring me. And that was, I mean, especially with a race like Western States, you know, where you had so many talented and fast women running, I'm like, you know, I'd never run against many of these women before, and I don't like to pressure myself with you know, aggressive goals and with racing in general. I guess I'm not a racer at heart. I don't like to compete against others. I like to, you know, run for myself and to run smart performances and see what I can do, you know, just very individually. You know, it's all like kind of just seeing, you know, being the best I can be, I guess. So
yeah.
With Western States, I went into it with great fitness. I didn't secure an entry into the race until May 10th, actually. You know, I got in through the Montreal Ultra Cup and not on a great performance at that. I headed out to the Ice Age Trail 50, 19 days after Boston, you know, and I scraped an entry, you know, third place result, which got me the entry into Western States, which essentially gave me 7 weeks to train for a 100-miler when I'd mostly been focused on marathons and 50s for the, you know, the bulk of 2014 up until that point.
Right.
And I guess, so I mean, it was fun because it was a little bit of a challenge, but I will say I went into it with tremendous base fitness, or went into my Western States kind of micro training cycle with really good base fitness. Some of the things that I think really helped me, I did a lot of back-to-back long runs in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, which aren't the tallest mountains by any stretch, but they have a ton of elevation change on very technical terrain. So it's excellent for building up your quads. You know, I was doing a lot of very steep, you know, uphills, a lot of very extended steep descents. And I think that really helped to toughen up my body. In addition to that, you know, I made sure to do a lot of very easy recovery days during the week. And I throw in a workout on Wednesdays, which was usually, you know, my build up to Western States, either hill repeats or a longer tempo run, which was nice because, you know, that kept some of the speed there. But, you know, I made sure I built in plenty of recovery time as well. And then, I guess, you know, the last, big thing, which a lot of people didn't understand because they thought I was crazy for doing this, but for a mental boost, I ran the Mount Washington Road Race the weekend before. I'm a climber. That's my strength as a runner. You know, I love to chug uphill, which I have no idea why. I mean, it's one of those things where I don't know how I, you know, discovered that I was how I became a good uphill runner, because I never thought that's what I would love, but it's what I love. And the Mount Washington Road Race is a 7.6-mile run that's entirely uphill. You gain about 4,700 feet of vertical, and it's a lot of fun. I love it. And you know, my coach was telling me, you can't do this before Western States. It's too close. But I knew I needed that little last mental boost to, you know, to provide me with that, you know, that encouragement and just prove to myself that I could go and tackle Western States and all of these, you know, all of the elevation change it offered. So I did that race. I ran it, you know, more at a training pace, but it was, I think it really helped me going into it. And, you know, just provided me with that confidence that I could tackle the big course the weekend after.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I have a personal love affair with the rock pile. I've done the run and the bike as well a few times, and what a great mountain that is. And you know, the interesting thing is going uphill, you don't obviously have the same eccentric component that you would have coming downhill. I mean, to run from the summit down to the base would have been insane, but going uphill, you know, that doesn't, it's a long climb for sure, but it wouldn't have the damaging effects that coming down would. And, that's awesome. I mean, what a great, great place. You're obviously training, so you're training in and around the Mount Washington Valley and doing many of your long runs in that area.
Yep. I love to put together, you know, fun loops and traverses, and they're not fast. I mean, the White Mountains, you know, if you're going 3 to 5 miles an hour on average, you're trucking just with all of the hiking that you need to do on some of the more rugged terrain. But one thing I think a lot of people underestimate when they train for ultras, especially 100 milers, is just the importance of having that time on your feet, which is where the White Mountains are awesome. And I think, you know, which is also is one of the reasons that, you know, I was able to transition and do well at ultras is that, you know, I came from an endurance hiking background. So I was used to being out on my feet for 14 hours a day. I mean, of course, hiking. But, you know, just if you're out there moving and spending that time moving, it really makes a difference, especially towards the tail end of a 100-mile race, I think, keeping steady forward progress.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I think that's certainly something for any of our listeners that are thinking about venturing to longer trail racing. And I know Deb could speak to this as well too, is, you know, the value of just being out there and putting time on your feet hiking. You know, it's a great strength builder, and obviously with the terrain changing as much as it does up there. I haven't done, you know, personally, I haven't done a ton of hiking in the White Mountains, but I've certainly done a little bit, you know, the typical climbs up Tuckerman and down the variety of, and up and down a variety of the trails that come off of that. And so there's obviously a great opportunity to, between the fire roads and obviously all of the trails that are there. A great strength builder, and as you say, something that's simply about time on your feet and just building that resiliency, sort of resistance to fatigue, that's so critical in an ultra, as opposed to just getting out there and logging miles, right? Just slogging out miles, especially on the roads.
Exactly. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, if you're doing an easy, you know, 50K, I mean, you could do that, what, in four and a half hours if it's on, you know, good terrain. But like in the White Mountains, that might take you 7 or 8 hours, depending
right.
on the route you
yeah.
choose. So yeah. I think it's important to mix things up. I mean, there's a place for the easier stuff. There's a place for the harder stuff. And I think that, you know, everything kind of came together for me at Western States because I really made sure my training was well-rounded.
Yeah, excellent. Talk a little bit about your approach to nutrition as well. And I think, you know, it was, of course, interesting for me to be out at the Medicine and Science Conference prior to the race. I was really curious to hear some of the speakers talk about everything from hyponatremia to GI upset. And naturally, as you know, this is a topic that I spend a lot of time thinking and talking about and have for years. And certainly I think at the end of the day, we all have, you know, an approach that works best for us. And, but I'm always curious to hear, you know, an athlete of your caliber and how you approach the way that you eat and also the way that you fuel on the race course. What are some of your philosophies and thoughts about that?
Yeah. So, I guess my biggest philosophy with food is I like to eat real food, you know, so food that comes from a tree or from an animal, you know, and I try to shy away at least from, you know, during the week and in my daily diet from anything that's largely processed. I love to cook. I have my fiance also is a wonderful cook, so I'm lucky there. He makes me a lot of great meals. And in terms of like, you know, like a macronutrient breakdown, I am very much a low carb runner. I eat a very high fat diet that's mostly, you know, it's all healthy fats, moderate protein, a lot of beef that I get locally. I have a great farmer who's about 30 minutes away, and she provides me with all sorts of awesome beef. You know, a lot of wild caught fish, and then just I round things out with vegetables, and most of my carbs actually just come from starchy, you know, vegetable sources such as, you know, parsnips, sweet potatoes, winter squash, things like that. But I mean, I don't actively track any sort of calories or anything. I eat, you know, food for fuel. I view it as fuel, and I do know I tend to follow a low carb approach, which has worked well for me. Of course, I cycle in more carbs, you know, on higher volume training days, but I believe that following the kind of, you know, nutrition plan that I do enables me to run very efficiently and to, you know, just to burn more fat during some of these longer races. During races, I have a really good fueling plan going where I kind of balance a product called Tailwind, which is a drink that contains calories and electrolytes with gels. And, you know, I look to get in about 200 calories an hour. And actually, I do have my West. I did finally calculate my total calorie intake for Western States, and I was right on par. I took in 21 servings of Tailwind, 14 gels, a few Vespas, and it worked out exactly to 194 calories an hour, which was right where I wanted to be, which was surprising. I mean, I really am. I thought that I was going to be lower than that, so I was glad to see that, you know, I was able to really hit that, you know, right around that 200 calorie an hour mark, because sometimes during shorter races, like, you know, like 50 milers, I can run them on very, very low fuel. I think I ran Ice Age on like 900 calories or something total. I mean, I'm just very efficient at burning fat at this point. And I mean, nutrition is one of those things that's super individual. You know, I love, you know, using myself kind of as an experiment and tweaking with, you know, different, you know, styles of eating and fueling approaches, you know, to see what works best for me. And I mean, it took some time for me to discover this approach, and it works really well for me, and I've definitely seen progress in my running. But, you know, just as a note, you know, I think that we all need to really figure out the approaches that work best for our bodies. So, you know, just because this works for me, don't think it'll apply to you too. You know, make sure that you're safe and always, you know, just try to, you know, just find things that work for you, I guess. But
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's pretty much my approach in a nutshell. I focus on, you know, eating whole real foods, and I found a good little fueling plan that worked for me at Western States. I guess the biggest thing I learned at Western States as well is that I can do a race of that length entirely on you know, on a drink and a gel plan, because in the past I've always had to eat solid foods at some point, but I really I didn't, you know, feel a need to, or even really, you know, crave them at any point during the race, which was pretty neat, because this is actually the most difficult 100-mile course that I've completed. And typically when you're on tougher terrain, you know, your body demands, you know, a little bit more food and real food while you're running.
Right, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly it's not uncommon to have runners talk about, you know, feeling hunger, even, you know, certainly for the triathletes that are doing half iron or Ironman distance, and those races tend to be shorter than a 100-miler. So that is pretty remarkable that you were able to get through that on what was essentially, you know, a liquid-based fueling platform. And that's awesome. You know, I have to say, I mean, and I'll podcast about more of this in the future, and I'll have some other folks on as well too. You know, there's the low carb, high fat school, which is become more predominant recently with the books by Steve Finney and Jeff Olick. And the research that they themselves have done in some instances with Western States runners, where, you know, where we're obviously looking at metabolic efficiency and manipulating the diet to increase our ability to burn fat as a fuel and minimize glycogen depletion. But the one element that I think a lot of endurance athletes forget, and you really have already hit on this, which is that there's the natural adaptation that occurs when you're out there for many, many hours on your feet, and in some instances maybe not fueling as you might typically. And so your body is really adapting. You know, years and years ago when I would myself do some longer runs and I'd hit around 17 or 18 miles out on the road, and I'd think to myself, okay, now this is the point where I'm really starting to do some benefits in terms of whether it's, you know, fast twitch fiber becoming more aerobic, you know, and an adaptation in that respect, or whether or not it's, you know, a mitochondrial development or capillary development, or, you know, at the cellular level, our muscles learning literally how to extract more fat from the bloodstream. And all of these components that are, you know, sort of happening from an adaptive point of view are happening because of the training, right? So certainly your approach to eating whole foods and listening to your body and staying away from processed stuff on a routine basis is important. But the things that you've done, even over a relatively short period of time, you know, 14 hours out on your feet out hiking in the mountains, has been a huge factor in your ability to become a good fat burner. You know, it's pretty remarkable to watch, even, you know, at your relatively young age, to see the success you had out there, because you really finished pretty fresh. We could continue to talk about Western States on and on, and I think before we wrap up that race, and touch on a few more things before I let you go. You know, I could keep you here all day, right? We've been on the podcast for a while. Talk about, you know, that last couple of miles. I know you were running with your sister, and you guys obviously have a very close relationship. At least that was my perspective watching it as an outsider. And then I know Deb, you know, sort of jogged back from the high school there in Auburn and ran, you know, onto the track with you, and man, it was so exciting for all of us to be there. And just talk about the feelings that you had, you know, finishing that race, and of course, you know, feeling as good as you did.
Yeah, no, the last few miles were really quite surreal. It was fun. So I picked up my sister at Highway 49, and you know, we started running, and she was so excited. You know, she'd never been at an ultra marathon before, and so she didn't really know what to expect. And I mean, she was just telling me, you know, how much fun she'd had, how excited she was. And what was really cute is she'd obviously asked Deb for pacing tips, because she would say little things. You know, like, you're running so strong. Like, I'm being kind of quiet. But the biggest thing is my sister is, she's very competitive versus, you know, I told you, I'm not so competitive against others. I just run for myself. And she was telling me, she's like, you know, Natalie's only a few minutes behind you, and I'm not going to let her beat you. And I'm like, Jenna, I'm not competitive. Let's just run and have fun. No one knowing, but what was pretty remarkable for me was that late in the race, I was still able to jog up most of the uphill sections, and that last 6.7 mile stretch is not easy. I mean, it's got some hills on it. So we were running pretty consistently and strong, and we were actually you know, passing several guys that, you know, I guess had slowed down at that point. But it was really cool. We crossed No Hands Bridge. And it was really neat. We didn't even stop there. That was like the final aid station before Roby Point. And
right around 96 and a half miles or so. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was covered. They'd covered it in lights. So it was really cool, because as you ran down to the water, you could just, you know, you had all these lights, and it was just a really fun little sensory experience, you know, that late in the day. And from there, I'm like, oh, I hope it's going to be nice and flat, but you could actually see cars, you know, like you could see the lights from cars. They were very obviously up a ways on a hill. So I'm like, okay, we're going to have one more climb. And the climb up to Roby Point, it's extended, you know, when you've gone 90, you know, 7 miles on your feet. So we got up that, and And then we got to that aid station, and it was so cool. And one of the things that was really exciting about this race for me was, as you touched upon, when I started, a lot of people they didn't know who I was, so I would come through aid stations and or I'd be out on the course, and people would be like, "Are you Casey? Are you Emily?" Because I was up towards the front, and
right.
And we got into Roby Point, and everyone there was like, "Oh, it's Larissa. You know, we've been waiting for you, and you know, like you're almost there." And it was really cool. And I mean, I guess that's just how the world works now, you know, with social media and cell phones, but people had, you know, looked me up, you know, throughout the course of the race. And by the end of the race, you know, people were excited to see me and they were waiting for me. And it just provides that extra level of encouragement, you know, when you know that people are there and they're actually cheering for you now. So we hit that aid station and, you know, we saw those little Western States feet that they spray paint on the ground and there was one more half mile hill on asphalt that my sister and I shuffled up it, you know, as best we could. And then Deb was there to meet us. And I wasn't expecting to see her. So it was just so exciting to know that, you know, both of my pacers were going to be there to, you know, to bring me into that track. And we jogged down the hill. We passed this awesome man who sets up his own aid station every year, about half a mile from the track, which was pretty cool. He was a you know, a chill dude, and I was like, that's pretty awesome. You know, like this guy. It's cool to see, like, you know, you have Auburn just there, excited about the race, getting behind it, and then we hit the track, and I mean the lights were there, you know, all shining and. You know, they started to make the announcements and, you know, it all just kind of sunk in that, you know, I mean, I was finishing what had been, you know, like, you know, the race of my life. I went into it with, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little choked up, but, you know, I just went into that race with really simple goals and just, you know, really first and foremost to be happy and enjoy the experience. And, you know, just running around that last quarter mile, it just reminded me of all the track workouts I've done since November. And I tried to pick it up as best I could. And there were just little, you know, there were kids there. They were like high-fiving me. And, you know, you could see that finish line. And it was really funny because they had all these, you know, they had all the people with cameras and video cameras. So you could see them like across the finish line. It's like you feel almost like a celebrity. It's kind of weird, you know, because they're there.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
See the bulbs flashing and it was unreal. I still am kind of struggling to process it because, you know, it was the first time in my life that I realized, wow, I mean, maybe this is something I'm actually good at. You know, I mean, it's something that I love, and there's nothing better in life than you know, finding something that you love and then discovering that you perhaps have an unexpected talent for it too. So it was really a pretty emotional experience, and I get emotional just thinking about it.
Yeah, I hear you. That's awesome. I mean, I think we should just end the podcast right here. I mean, there's nothing else to say. I mean, that, you know, and I know Deb is there and she's smiling too because it was equally, I think an equally moving experience for her, to watch, you know, to watch you achieve on that level and be able to run onto the track with you. And, you know, I think, you know, in lead up to having you on the podcast, you know, you and I chatted a little bit, and one of the things I told you I would ask you is to maybe share a few tips for some novices out there. But, you know, you have shared so many things that I think every listener will look back on and hopefully listen carefully to. And I would even suggest to folks that they listen to this podcast a number of times because there's been so many little gems. You know, you have talked so much, Larissa, about, you know, your love of running and your positive outlook and all of these things, but let's not forget how hard you trained, you know, and the work that you do on a day in and day out basis. You didn't get to that level of accomplishment without working really hard and without pushing yourself. And I think, and Deb could speak to this as well too, you know, one of the things that I certainly want all of our listeners to hear and it's something that I encourage folks to consider and think about and implore them to seek out, which is that balance between the discipline and the work ethic that's required to improve, but retaining or keeping that joy, that, you know, that pure love of movement, you know, all of the feelings that you've conveyed and everything that you've talked about with this race, to bring those elements all together is really the secret to everything, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, what I was going to say, I mean, it's, I think Deb and I both work tremendously hard to pursue this sport. But I mean, one thing that I mean, it never really feels like work for me, because when you're doing something that you love, you know, it's like you want to do it. I mean, of course you have those days where, you know, it takes a lot of motivation to get out and run.
Yeah, thank you, Larissa. You're human too, right? Yeah.
Exactly. But for the most part, you know, I mean, it's something that I do, I mean, first and foremost, because I just, you know, I absolutely love it. I love how it makes me feel. So I think I've been able to find that balance, you know, that you were talking about, and I'm sure Deb has too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we all know, and maybe not so much beginner runners know, but those of us who have been running and competing over the years that know that it's not all within training, and especially within a race, that it's not all feel good, happy moments. But the part, the reason why you do it is not to have a feel good, happy time through the race. It's to experience challenge and to overcome them and to come out the other end and finish and know that you pushed yourself, you did the best you could, and that. And just that feeling that you come away with the accomplishment is what the ultimate goal is. I feel because you're especially in an ultra race. I tell people, you experience a lifetime of emotions in one race. You're gonna have happy moments, sad moments, mad moments, frustrated moments, moments of euphoria, and it's funny how it all happens in within 24 hours. But, you know, then when you cross the line and you know you've done the best you can, and you've gone through those tough times, and you knew that there's light at the end of the tunnel, and you continued on. There was times when you may have felt that it would just be easier just to stop, but you've continued on. That's really the icing on the cake, you know, the real reason why you do it and what it's all about.
Yeah, well said, Deb. Well said. Larissa, what's coming up for you now? I mean, what's the next thing on your horizon, both personally and as well as athletically?
Yeah, so personally, I am getting ready to move to the Bay Area. Actually, in just about 2 weeks, I'm probably going to be flying out there on the 24th of July.
Wow, exciting.
It's exciting. It's nerve-wracking, but I mean, I'm never one to shy away from a challenge or a new opportunity. So I'm looking forward to the road ahead for sure. So that's my big personal move that's coming up.
Excellent. All right. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And in terms of racing, my next big race is going to be Cascade Crest 100 in August, which is a 100-miler out in the Cascades in Washington State. It was my only DNF last year, and I just feel a really big desire to go back and redeem myself on that course. So I'm really looking forward to that race, because it's a beautiful, beautiful race, I guess, to start. And I don't care if I have to walk it out for 100 miles. I'll be there, and I will finish and get my Cascade Crest buckle. And then after that, I will be looking to focus a bit more on road marathoning. One of my big goals is to qualify to run in the 2016 Olympic Trials, which means running a 2:43 marathon or better. So I recently obtained elite entry into California International Marathon, which actually produces the most Olympic trials qualifiers, I believe, of any marathon in the country. So the fact that, you know, they're letting me start with the elite field is, I can't believe it. I'm so honored. But it'll really give me the best opportunity to go for that sub 243, because I'll be able to to start unhindered and to use the elite fueling stations, which should be really exciting, because you get to have your own little bottles and you get to decorate them. And I know it's such a small thing, but I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, the 243 is, you know, obviously, I think you ran a 244 in Boston, and, Boston, I think, when you're well-prepared, can be a pretty fast course. What's interesting is it's predominantly downhill, especially late, and you've talked about yourself as, you know, really being a climber. Obviously, you didn't notice the Newton Hills at all, that's for sure. Relatively modest climbs, comparatively speaking, when you're talking about Western states or Mount Washington. But good luck with your preparation for both the Cascade 100 miler and, of course, for the marathon. Your future is so, so bright, and it's going to be exciting to watch and see how things develop for you. Have you considered or thought much about going back to Western states again? I mean, being so close, have you thought about winning that race?
Oh, I don't think I'll ever win it, but I definitely will go back next year, because I had such a wonderful run there, you know, just a week ago, I guess, a little over a week. And I mean, I'll go into it, you know, if I do it again with exactly the same goals, exactly the same strategy, just hopefully with a bit more experience on the course. Well, definitely with a bit more experience on the course since I've run it.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think I'll definitely be back, because you hear so much about Western states and the magic that surrounds it. And once you've actually been there and experienced it firsthand, I think, as Deb said, now she wants to run it too. It's really one of a kind. It's a really special race. And I'm just tremendously honored that I already have an entry to run next year, so it'll be fantastic.
Right, that's awesome. You know, I got to be honest too. You know, I've fallen into the category of runners that wants to go and do Western states too. You know, I look for something to get a little fire underneath me. So I've already planned. I'm going to go back to, I think I'm going to do Pisgah in September, a couple of weeks before Vermont 50 mountain bike, and then I'll look for a 50 miler in the spring, and maybe knock out 100 next year if I can survive what it takes to get there. But maybe there's a Western States in my future someday. I'm not really sure. You know, a lot of things will have to align pretty perfectly. But I will say, you know, in all sincerity, Larissa, that your race and meeting you and just being there, I myself felt really honored to be a little part of everything that happened at Western States, and you've certainly inspired me, and I know you've inspired all the listeners that are going to be fortunate enough to tune in and hear some of your tidbits and just your general thoughts and just your zest for life. I really, really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I'm glad that we could make it work.
Yeah. And we'll do it again in the future. You know, I'd say we make this like a regular series. We'll check in with you on occasion and track your progress to become unequivocally the most, I would say popular pursuit athletic performance podcast, second to Deb's probably interviews, but, you know. Right, Deb?
Yeah, sure.
No, I think Deb's is the most popular for me.
Deb, good luck with your preparation for Tahoe Rim 100 as well, too, which is 10 or 12 days away. I think I can certainly say with great confidence that your preparation is as good as ever. And we all need the stars to align on the day, but I'm really excited for your race And thank you for joining Larissa and I today.
Yes, you're welcome. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome. All right. So thank you, of course, to our listeners for hanging in, and some great stuff today with Larissa Danis and Deb Livingston. Hope you all have a great day and run safe. Keep the joy, smile, and just love it. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete in you.